welcome to Season 7 of The Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. For this season, we're going back to our roots and talking to all sorts of creatives from a wide variety of industries, backgrounds, and creative endeavors about how they make it all work, from mental health to relationships to money to the creative process itself, and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Shannon Byrne, and I'm just trying to figure it out like the rest of us. Big thanks to the band Blessed for letting us use our song Endure as our intro music for this season. You can find their music at Blessed, that's B-L-E-S-S-E-D, band.bandcamp.com, or wherever you buy your music. And to Hannah Spencer for all of the design and branding and the strategy work she does for us. And Lonnie Webb for running our social media. Thank you for listening. Hope y'all dig it. Hi. Hello. Welcome to episode 83 of the Process Podcast. This week's episode is with Danielle Devereaux. Danielle is the founder of Domelod, a digital strategy consultancy in Austin, Texas. She is originally from Brooklyn, New York, and has 15 years of experience working in marketing. And she started Domelod over 10 years ago. And through Domelod, she works with agencies, nonprofits, and startups on their brand strategy, content strategy, SEO, social media strategies, and anything to help them be found by their ideal or target or preferred audience. She's worked with brands like Red Nose Day and Comic Relief, Austin Women's Health Center, Rosario Ventures, among many others. Before becoming a marketer, she worked as a docent in museums and an AD in the film industry in New York. She also ran her own children's clothing company, all of which she hand embroidered for over 5 years as she was raising her first child. In this episode, we talk about all of that, her journey, how she got to where she is, why and how she went from the arts world into marketing, how she's designed a life optimized around running her own business and being a present mom and partner, tips for digital marketing and SEO, how we all need to calm down and be patient with ourselves because everything will be okay, and a whole lot more. I feel like it's worth adding the context, and you will likely be able to tell very shortly, that Danielle is a dear friend of mine and a frequent collaborator on client projects and other stuff. She was staying with me in one of her visits to New York, and we went upstate to an old church that friends renovated, and now Airbnb, and we were just hanging and getting out of the city. So you can tell, we recorded this during hang time. As such a close friend of Danielle's, I really enjoyed learning more about her life. Like, I did not know about her children's clothing company, and also just her perspective on creating a life that works for you, as well as being patient with yourself and your creativity and your art, and the value of having a long-term vision and waiting until that is clear before sharing your art. Also, Danielle has done a lot with film photography and film in general, and she holds it for herself because she's not quite sure what she wants to do with it yet. We talk about all of that. Hope you dig this episode. You can find show notes and links to everything we talk about at theprocess.co, and links to where you can find Danielle. Domelod is Domelod, Damolade.com. If you're looking for some brand strategy, content strategy, SEO help, she is the person to go to. Although she's based in Austin, she works with clients everywhere. Thanks for being here. Catch you next week.
My sister and my husband, who are both writers and editors, said, don't edit while you're writing. Always write everything and then read it and then go back and edit it.
Totally.
And I do the complete opposite. I will start writing and then immediately start judging myself.
That's why you get anxious.
Yeah. I start judging myself and thinking like I'm not using the word I want to use. And then I immediately go back and start crossing stuff out and editing.
For someone who's so good at efficiency.
Not for myself, for other people.
But the way you work is very efficient.
Again, not for myself, for other people.
Yeah, fair.
I'm doing it for other people. It's taken me years to work on my own website. Literally years. I think I originally built the original website in 2011.
I feel like that's pretty normal for service-based people.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to do it for
them. Especially when what you do has to change depending on like what services are making you money at the time.
Right.
Because you keep having to like edit the options and the offerings and the services. And
instead of telling people, I mean, eventually you get to exactly what you do, right? Especially if you're talking to a potential client, it's exactly what you do for them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start with, I help build awareness, or I help you reach a quality market, mm-hmm. that's going to buy your shit, support your cause,
mm-hmm.
join your organization, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like you start there, right? And make it super simple.
Yeah. I just want to consolidate that thought down to be like messaging, audience, messaging, awareness, whatever, and marketing, which is like external, getting it out of the internal process and getting it out towards the external process. Like I want to even simplify what I do so that when I explain it, I'm using less words, not more, so that it's like anyone in any industry, but more so like industries that I'm interested in working with would be like, oh yeah, I understand what that means. We need that help.
You don't think, I mean, I feel like the most simple way to say it is I help people find your business online. That's what you're doing, right?
Or that's your so startup-y.
I mean, I feel like that's something anyone could understand.
It's
like
short
if someone
and
doesn't
punchy.
Know what online means.
Yeah. It's short and punchy.
But you just say you don't want, or you want to use the least amount of words.
That's true. Yeah.
And then from there, it's like, oh, well we start high level with your messaging and mm-hmm. like getting to the core of what you want.
Help you say what you want to say.
Right.
And have your audience understand your language because you're speaking directly to them.
Right.
And then
how like,
you say
how am I speaking directly to them?
Well, social
I'm
media.
SEO expert.
SEO, social media, information architecture, all the things.
Right.
But content strategy and brand strategy comes first. So that's like the internal, the on page, and then the off page is the external stuff like social media. And everybody jumps to that stuff first, always.
Right.
So it's always a matter of being like, okay, let's back up. You have inconsistent channels all over the place. Nothing looks the same from Facebook to Instagram to LinkedIn to your website. Or it looks the same, but it sounds different.
And it's telling, it's like, okay, you want to be on social media, but what do you want them to click through to?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. What's the objective?
Yeah.
What's the goal? Yeah. And you've got to get clear about those things before you do any external stuff. I need to get clear about those things too before I do external stuff, which is why I haven't really done my Instagram or my Facebook for Domelad.
Right. So taking a step back, I know we just went through this, but what is Domelad and who is Danielle Devereaux?
So Domelad is a digital strategy consultancy that we were just discussing what it is the digital strategy is. And I think I've written down what I think it is because I'm not 100% sure ever because it changes and morphs. But I would say that it helps brands and companies get clear about what they want to say, which is the messaging,
mm-hmm.
and who they want to be speaking to, their audience, how to say it. And marketing and creative is sort of the how to say it. And the strategic part is the kind of step back and what they want to say. And then kind of making all of that consistent.
Do you also help them with the who? Or do they usually have a pretty good idea of who they're talking to?
They have an idea of who they're talking to, but until they go through like strategic exercises, they don't know much about those people besides the like obvious things, like they're women ages 24 to 35 who want to buy razors.
Right. Oh, God. How long have you been doing Domelad?
Well, I've been doing marketing for like 15 years,
mm-hmm.
but Domelad kind of came into existence after I had my second kid. So I would say around 2009.
Oh, is it 10 years this year?
It is.
Happy birthday.
I should throw myself a party.
You should fucking throw myself parties for my project. Not yours as a business, not a project, but for my stuff all of the time.
But it's been a baby business for like the first 5 years. I would say it was like kind of a baby business where I was just taking any kind of marketing work that I could get. And now I'm kind of honing in on the type of client that I want to work with and the type of work I want to do. So I would say the last 4 years, it's really become more of a digital strategy company as opposed to just like today freelance, I'm going to do some
name on it.
Freelance SEO. Tomorrow I might do some freelance social media, like, and I might be working for some random, like, for the first guy that ever hired me and actually taught me to do SEO. He did teach me a lot about data analytics and SEO and the importance of like a solid reporting methodology.
So you mentioned like you're now at the point of crafting or like honing in on who your ideal client is and what you do. What type of clients are you working with now and like what type do you want to work with?
Well, I have a mix of agencies, nonprofits, and then some like smaller brand / startup-y type things, which I would say all three of those are really fun for different reasons. I like to work with agencies where, like the agency that I'm working with now, which is Wordland Design out in San Francisco, out in Oakland, where somebody has slightly more experience with me in a field that I'm more interested in. Margot, who's really amazing at doing like workshops with clients, where she's getting them to actually like, she's pulling ideas out of the stakeholders, like right there and in the present. Like it's real physical and tangible. Like she's, things are on the table and like whiteboards are happening and like sticky pads are places, as opposed to everything being remote, you know, which has been the majority of my work and it still is majority of my work. But when I get to like go in and like workshop, which I did with Presario Ventures, which was kind of cool, like actually workshop their personas, their audiences, like their adjectives, like we are this, we are not that, like their statements, you know,
values,
their values, their mission, like help them figure, get clear on all that stuff. And that's more like in the startup-y world, you have to do more of that stuff because those folks have just not really had the chance to think about that because they're so focused on the product or the service and growth. And they all, I think, mistakenly think they need to hire growth hackers or growth marketers, whatever you want to call it, before they even do any strategy work, you know,
right,
or any backup, do some internal work.
Do you find that, I feel like in my experience, startups tend to think that the strategy is a waste of time and money.
Yeah.
They just want to like get to work.
Let's
do Can you just execute? Let's just
start executing.
Yeah.
And then like 2 years later, if they're still in business, they're like, why is all this a shit show?
Yeah. Why aren't my analytics in place?
Like, oh, we never set up Google Analytics. Like we've never run like a traffic report. Like we don't actually know where our traffic is coming from. We don't know anything about the...
We don't have any benchmarks.
Right. So you can keep growing, quote unquote, growing blindly, but you don't have, if you don't have the data analytics in place, you don't know really what's working and what's not working.
Right.
And you can't analyze why something is working or is not working. Like why is your article getting 20,000 visitors a month about music business?
Right.
As opposed to an article about a widget.
Yeah.
That's not doing so well. Like what is it about that that's interesting to that audience? And or what is the way you're saying it compelling to that audience? Why is it making them take more action on their website as opposed to just like bouncing off the page or not coming in the first place? So
using that example, would you, so like for us, it's, we put it in the newsletter and it got a fuck ton of clicks and like that we made an assumption that it's because it was the first piece of content that was about making money versus like making your art. Would you dive deeper than that?
Yeah. Right. So that's like part of what you would want to explore in a persona.
Right. Where would you go from that? Like building the persona. You don't have to get super in the weeds.
Yeah. One of the things I would say is like when we did personas together, when we worked together on the WeShape project, like we basically pulled the lowest hanging fruit data sources for those personas.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like we did a bunch of customer evaluations or customer interviews.
Yeah.
Like I'd say that is probably the best and deepest source of understanding more about what's important to your audience. Like obviously what's important to the music audience that knows about Splice is like, how the hell do we make money as musicians?
Right.
That's a key message that you would want to explore on your blog and landing pages and put whatever your company's business objectives are, like wrapping that up in there somehow to get your audience to do what you want them to do as well on the page, not just serving them, but it's also your messaging obviously needs to serve your business goals.
Right.
But yeah, like going deeper in the persona stuff and the content strategy stuff is, I think, the most interesting and the most in the direction I would want to go. But at the same time, I also think that SEO is like, everybody says they need SEO and they want SEO, but there's not that many people that can do SEO like well, or that get its importance in the whole content strategy picture, like how much it affects on the website and like how it lays the groundwork for the success of any given website as far as like a long-term strategy, because it's basically making the pages visible to search engines.
Right.
And if you don't do SEO, you're kind of like, it's a lost opportunity.
So for anyone who like has no idea what SEO is it fair to say like understanding what people are searching for and how they're searching for it, like what type of terms they're using?
Definitely what people are searching for is important. How they're searching always is changing. I mean, like with voice search and everything, like the like last year that like blew up and all the SEOs were like, oh, you better be optimized for voice search, which is totally dumb, I think. And backwards, it's like you can't optimize a page for Google Play the Sea and Cake on Spotify for me. Like that's voice search, right? So the way SEO works is that you literally have to put the exact keywords that you want the page to rank for on in the metadata of the page. So people saying like, oh, let's optimize for voice search, you would have to like make your page
sound like an idiot,
sound like a robot, like sound like an AI thing, right, as opposed to like an organic thing that works for people, like sounds like people.
Right. Because Google's algorithms are smart enough to like connect the robotic search terms with certain search terms within like normal website copy, right?
Yeah. It gets semantics basically at this point. It understands semantic relevance between words and phrases. So in that sense, like you don't have to exactly have the phrases the way you want, but even like today's tools, like if you use WordPress and you download the Yoast SEO plugin, which is probably the standard for like small, medium business to have a WordPress site and use Yoast. Yoast still tells you to use an exact match keyword and an exact keyword in the title, meta description, and in the body copy, in the headings. And that's how I've seen SEO work, is with exact match. When I put the exact keyword on the page, I see that keyword bounce up onto page 2 or 1 for that content. So putting in some kind of weird phrase match terminology, I don't think Google's as smart as everyone thinks it is. Like obviously when we were messing with the Google Voice thing this morning and we were telling it to like play an album, it was playing a song. It wasn't quite there yet.
Yeah. Like, but I feel like when people are talking about voice search, it's a little bit different than asking it to play an album, right? It's like, where can I find shoes near me or whatever.
Yeah, the near me keywords always are amusing because people search that. Sometimes you'll see like literal pages like pizza. I worked on Domino's pizza website 3 or 4 years ago, and some of the local like chain Domino's actually had that word on there. They had that in the meta tags. It would be like Domino's pizza near me, domino's.com was like their meta title.
Okay.
It's like, because they were trying to rank for that specific.
Well, that's not how it works.
Well, no, because, exactly. It doesn't work that way. The whole other thing is that Google understands where you're at when you're searching from your phone.
Right.
So you don't have to put near me in your keyword exactly, because you could just search Domino's pizza and Google knows you're in, you know, downtown Austin, Texas, and there's 5 Domino's locations like within the 5-mile radius from you. And it's going to show you those 5 results.
Right. You didn't answer what type of clients you want to work with.
Oh, thank you. Definitely want to work with more economic justice, reproductive rights, social justice type clients. Worked with ACLU this year of Northern California. Built them a website, which is kind of weird because I don't usually do that. A Squarespace site. I didn't code anything.
Yeah.
Working with Ad Council now, which is great. Public service announcement, Smokey the Bear type stuff. That is through another agency that I partner with, which is a smaller content strategy agency. And I like having that buffer because I don't necessarily want to go deep inside like a organization with all that bureaucracy. I like having the buffer and having like somebody that knows a little bit more than I do about the client and knows like how to manage the client so that I can just come in and do work and not have to like deal with like all the project management and all the relationship and all that stuff. Startups with a budget is always fun. Yeah. Funded startups are always fun. Not bootstrapped, even though I'm definitely working with one now, but he seems to have very deep pockets, so I'm not going to worry about it.
No. Yeah. What does your day-to-day look like?
It's taken me like a long time to build a comfortable day, really, out of being a mom and working and being a wife and all that. So, but my day is like awesome because I totally structure it based on like what I need to get done plus what everybody else needs to get done and like what I also need to happen so that there's like order in my life. I get up and I definitely run or climb depending on what machine I'm on the gym.
You're like having coffee and after, dropping your kids off.
Definitely after having coffee and dropping off Juna at high school. And then I go and then go to the gym and then come home and hang out with the dog. And then I kind of meander into the office around 11. Usually stay until 4. So I have like 4 to 5 hours of like deep focus work unless I'm in meetings, which sucks. Mm-hmm. And then I go home and I make sure that there's food. I make sure that there's a meal cooked and that everybody's sitting down together and I watch The Bachelor.
Your kids and I were talking about this one of the times I was in Austin, probably the last time, how like when you're working, and we talked about this earlier too, when you're working and it's like, obviously, you're going to respond to your kids' like text messages and calls and stuff, but mm-hmm. like, do you focus compared to a lot of other people who, myself included, have a hard time doing that sometimes? But you're very good about like getting your shit done.
You're selling yourself short. You can focus.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously.
I get a lot done, but.
You get in the zone.
Yeah. It takes a while, though.
Yeah. I also sometimes don't understand how you do that. Because like, I remember when we were working together in the co-working space and I feel like you were getting up like every 5 minutes, but then you were like also knocking, banging out great work at the same time. So I'm like, what is she doing? How is she, is it somehow transferring from her brain into the computer, like in a way that I don't realize, even though she's like in the other room right now?
I get up a lot. I realize that having like a job, I'm like, they probably think I'm crazy.
You kind of have to do it.
I think it's, for me, it's, I do my best thinking when I'm not at the computer. So I'll like start on something and I'll walk away and then it'll get better in my head and then I'll run back to my computer real quick.
And also when you're running, like when you're exercising,
yeah,
it's like, for some reason, like the sentences, my sentence structure becomes like I'm like very eloquent in my brain when I'm like thinking about like how I want to say something or what I want to say. And then I like go and sit down at the computer and I'm like, fuck, I can't remember.
See, I don't think about words when I'm running. I just like listen to people yelling at me and I just run.
That's kind of how I gave birth. Away, so. Like, I had a really intense midwife who was German and she was basically just like, do it, Danielle. Push now. Oh, and I was like, yes.
That sounds terrible.
I want the expert to just tell me what I need to do when I need to do it. You know, like I want to like pay for somebody else's expertise.
Yeah, we were talking about that yesterday or the other day about people. Okay, we can believe this if we need to. About like saying, you know, you want people to be like, do this, not, I think maybe you should.
Yeah, no. I just, like, I feel like if you're paying for a service, especially when people are saying that they have master's degrees and or they're worth X amount of dollars per hour, it's like, I want to be able to trust that that person is actually who they say they are. And I also want to be able to trust that they're the expert that they say they are. And I want to pay them appropriately for the work they're doing, you know, but then I expect that they're going to do the work and not be like, I think maybe you should possibly perhaps change this one word in this sentence. It's like, no, if I'm hiring you to copy edit, you better damn well know what word needs to be changed in that sentence and not run it by me like meekly in a comment in the sidebar on that document.
Which goes to like know who you're working with, right? Like so much of service-based work is about personality management and like adapting your style to Because maybe that person has worked with people who,
yes,
you know,
I'm not good at that, I guess. I don't like know how to like.
But I meant she, like if she's working for, or they are working for you.
But they don't know me either that well, right? Because it's like, again, it's like hiring freelancers. A lot of the times, like when I hire people to do stuff, I'm just hiring them based on like some conversation I had with them in a Facebook group or like on a freelance board. Yeah. And they can say that they're experts and they know how to do X, Y, and Z. And then like, it sounds good and it looks good. And then you hire them and it's like, maybe, perhaps, sort of. And I'm like, no, just do the work. And then if I don't like the work, I'll tell you like, no, let's not do it that way. Let's do it this way. But like, honestly, if you're the expert that you say that you are, then I should be wowed by your awesome work that you're delivering.
Which also goes back to like how we as service people get work, right? Like, have you working with so many freelancers, have you found that that happens often? You've had like decent luck with finding people?
No, I really haven't. That's my whole point, I think, is what I'm trying to say is like, I really haven't. I need to find more people. That's why I like working with you, because I trust your work is going to be good. I wish I could get to the point in my company where I could hire you or someone like you to just stay around and do what I need to do. But that opens up a whole other can of worms as far as like responsibility and like
overhead.
Do I want to be an agency? And a lot of people I know that have started agencies, like my friend who I just had lunch with, he had this great little brand in Austin and they did PR and branding work. And it was a great little agency, but he sold it to a larger agency, got acquired by a larger agency. And now he works for this big agency in Austin. And he's like, he's over it already. And he's told me that if he was to go back and do it again, he would do it the way I'm doing it, which is like no overhead, just pick who you want to pick and work on projects with people you like and then move on.
I'm going to be egotistical for a second. I think one of the good things about me now today is that if I am not available for something, I'm now at the point where I have people I can recommend that I feel confident putting my name out, my neck out there for them.
That's great. Yeah, that's awesome.
So I think a part of, if you were to stick with freelancers, it's like finding people who can, who know a couple of other people. So like,
Yeah, word of mouth freelancers.
Right.
Yeah, I need to like go down that path much more than going down the like random digital nomad Facebook group or whatever that I'm on and like getting some random chick. And then it turns out that she's not as great as she says she is.
Right. Which I guess the reason why I like hammer on this point is no matter how many of these tools and like sites and ways to hire people come up, I feel like it all comes down to like showing your work and networking and like doing the job and right. And like being a kind person.
I'm not good at showing my work, I don't think. I think that like most people realize that I'm really good at what I do after they work with me. I'm not a very showy person.
How do you do?
Which I know that frustrates you because I don't show any of my work.
Yeah. Oh my God, you're with your artwork. It's the most frustrating thing.
Or any creative work, really.
Yeah.
Besides like strategy work.
Right. Because I see, well, and I only see your strategy work because I work with you.
Right.
How do you get it from clients?
The last year's been mostly word of mouth through a network of people in the Bay Area that I've worked with for the last couple of years. This amazing woman, Christy Lafayette, who's so great at networking and connecting people and so giving and wonderful about being like, this is my friend Danielle, she does this, you should hire her. And then I have another friend, this guy Tony Zito, who's a super rock star creative director guy who has basically always connected me with his bigger clients, like Comic Relief, Red Nose Day, was this woman, Kristen Ellington, who hired me there. She worked with Tony at like, I think he worked for, they worked at MTV together for a long time. Yeah, just like a few good people recommending me has been the way I've gotten my best clients. I definitely pick up randos like off the internet. AngelList has been a great source of startup work. Cloud Peeps used to be a great source of client work. And then just locally, you know, in Austin, there's a lot of companies that are always looking for marketing help and strategy work and stuff. And I have a couple of good connects there that always recommend me or refer me to clients.
Remember we were going through a kick where we wanted, I think it was you. Maybe it was Hannah. I think it was you. where you wanted to like focus more on the local business?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a thing?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like there's untapped potential there, focusing like on your local area. But I also feel like Austin is a little bit behind the times as far as like pay goes. So if I work for clients in San Francisco mm-hmm. or New York, it's super easy to say what my rate is and not have anybody be like,
right.
Whereas in Austin, you say your rate and people are kind of like, they think it's negotiable. I'm like, no, dude, it's not negotiable. Like 30% of that has to go to taxes and 401k and expenses. And so when I tell you my rate, like minus like 30% of that minimum, at least, is what I'm taking home, you know?
Yeah.
So
I love that you just said 401k because I've never, have ever, as a freelancer, well, I've never saved for my 401k
yeah.
until taking a full-time job. But I never put that in like any of my pricing. I've never like talked about it. I've never did it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's so important to be like, I mean, listen, fucker, I'm running a business.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how do you think I'm going to save for my...
Yeah. Like nobody is paying my retirement. I'm paying my retirement. I also don't have like anyone matching my retirement. Like if I'm going to match it, it's I'm going to match my own retirement. So right. like if I want to put $400 a month in my 401k and match that, then that's $800 a month, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like not that I'm anywhere close to putting that much away, but I should be for sure. But yeah, I think Lewis of Money Positive mentioned Vanguard, their mutual funds. And that's also what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I just send money to them every month and
they do all the stuff.
They do all the stuff with my money. And I've gotten good about actually paying my taxes.
Yeah. It takes time.
It does take time
to learn how to do that.
Yeah.
You pay quarterly and shit?
I pay quarterly only because I actually hired a real accountant and she does all of that for me. And then she just sends me a bill. If I had to do it myself, I would not do it. I need experts to hold me accountable. Going back to the like needing to hire experts, like I would like to hire an expert to like outsource the things that I do not want to think about and trust them to take care of it. And I'm happy to pay them for that service.
Right.
I do not want to think about quarterly taxes.
Yeah.
I do my own bookkeeping though.
Right.
And I'm not a numbers person, really, deep down.
I feel like from my perspective, to like kind of recap everything we've talked about to this point, you've designed this lovely life for yourself by like optimizing the shit out of it, focusing on what you're good at when it comes to client work and like building, even if it's low key, building a reputation that way and like, hiring other people to help you with other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that all comes back to being able to charge enough to hire those people.
Right. Being able to charge enough and to be able to pay those people with their work too. Cause it's like, you know, that's important to me.
Right.
It's like not having to be like, sorry, I can only pay you, you know, $30 an hour to do this. If like their normal rate is 50 or 60.
Right. Whereas you were very much the opposite with me and were like, never charge below $75 an hour ever again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never.
Appreciate. You also live in Austin now.
I do.
Being from New York.
Being City, from Brooklyn. New York City, Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. Which is a lower cost of living.
Much lower cost of living. Again, optimization by design.
Yeah. Oh, the thing I was going to say about optimizing your life too is like you have your teenager take a bus home instead of like spending 2 hours in traffic to go get her.
Exactly.
I feel like that's
not even my teenager.
Parents don't.
I have my 10-year-old take a bus home.
Yeah.
It's one bus. It goes down one block and it takes him home from his school every day. And I don't have to stop work and go get him.
Right.
And yeah, other people are like, what? Do you let your 10-year-old ride the public transportation? I'm like, dude, I grew up in Brooklyn. Like, I never had a car. It's possible. Children do ride buses and trains by themselves. It happens every day in the rest of the world. Like, get out of your trucks, Texas.
Yeah.
Get with the program. Build a freaking transportation system that works for everybody,
right.
which includes trains, not just buses. Stop building freaking roads and start thinking about long-term options like trains, buses, the environment.
Especially as a city, like people all the tech fuckers moving in.
Right. If you like actually want to keep those people in the core of the city and sell your freaking $2 million condos, then you need to actually have like real scalable options for transportations. Building more roads is not a scalable option anymore.
Right.
I don't think it should be anywhere, but.
Yeah. My hometown's like that too.
It's very frustrating.
How do you get into marketing to start, to begin with? Or why, I guess?
So I was in the arts. I was always in the art. I was a production assistant in film when I lived in New York, and I worked at the Museum of Moving Image. I was really into film stuff and photography stuff. I was a docent, a museum educator, and I made $12 an hour. And as a production assistant, I think I made all of $20 an hour, and I had to work long hours and blah, 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 all that stuff.
What would you go to school for?
I have a philosophy degree and fine arts minor, photography minor from CUNY, Hunter College.
Did you love that work though?
Which one?
Any of it?
The creative stuff? Work?
Yeah.
I love doing my work. I didn't so much like working in the museum or working in the film, but I never in the film business, but I never really got far enough in the film business because I got pregnant when I was 25. So I wasn't going to be a PA and pregnant. Like I wasn't that hardcore.
Yeah.
So I basically got into marketing because I was like, well, I'm going to start my own business. And I did that's when I started Love Plus One back in, it was like after 9/11 and we were still in New York. So it was like 2000 and when was Gina born? 2003. So it was like 2004 or five. So I started this little kind of crafty design company called Love Plus One. And I just was like making clothes and embroidering on clothes, and I would just bring them around to like little baby stores in like the Lower East Side, and I was selling them to like little boutiques and stuff. And so I was like, this could maybe be something. So I hired a web designer with the little money I had, and she built me a little HTML site, and I started selling the shirts online. And that was kind of like how I got interested in like online marketing. And it was kind of like also when Austin was kind of blowing up, like the whole craft scene in Austin, like was kind of blowing up. There was a lot of indie craft businesses, like in the early 2000s, like Jenny Hart, who's this amazing, amazing embroidery artist. She lives in LA now, but she started this company called Sublime Stitching, and she was a real big inspiration for me. Her marketing and branding is also amazing on Sublime Stitching. What she did was, which I think was super cool, was she's an amazing embroidery artist, but she also, what she did to make it a sustainable business was she drew her own patterns and then sold the patterns online. I took the hard route, and I used to hand draw all my own patterns. So I would illustrate whatever it was that I was going to embroider, and then I would put that pattern on the clothes, and I would embroider the clothes. But that's so labor intensive.
Yeah.
And I just kind of didn't really have a business plan. So I didn't think long term, like, oh, how am I going to sustain this with a baby? Although that is exactly what I did. Like Juna, all the way up until Juna was five, I was literally embroidering my fingers off my hands. Like,
but you did that for 5 years?
I did it for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's how I made money, by embroidering.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was starting to get like little side projects in marketing. So mm-hmm. like after I moved to Austin, the irony is I got work at a startup doing affiliate marketing, but the startup was in Brooklyn and I had just moved from Brooklyn to Austin. So I was embroidering and doing craft fairs. Mm. I did the first Renegade craft fair back when Renegade was still actually cool. I did it in McCarran Park in Williamsburg.
When you were still living in Brooklyn.
When I was still living in Brooklyn. That was like right before I moved to Austin. Really, the rest is history. I got obsessed with, I wanted to make money. Obviously, I was a new mom and I needed money. So I was like, marketing is a lot easier than embroidering my fingers off my hands.
Yeah.
Although it was great because I could just do that while Juno was little and crawling around.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like you had to really like, couldn't do like content strategy while watching a toddler, you know?
Yeah.
So embroidery is the kind of thing that you can do, which is why it's probably like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably why it's like women's art or whatever, because it's like something you can do while watching children. I don't think there's a single man embroiderer in the history of Western art.
I think I did run across one website one time that says she does actually like Western style, like Western scenes.
That's funny.
Embroidery, yeah.
I'd like to see that.
I have no idea where I found it. It was a wormhole, rabbit hole. at all. Was it tough to give up the embroidery business, or were you ready?
No, I was ready. I did it for a long time. And although it was really fun to like make that little world happen for a little while and like build the craft booth and like have everybody coming up to me and being like in the craft fair, like meeting your customer right then and there and being like, wow, this is so cool. I love how this looks and blah, blah, blah. And like being like very, people being very sweet and supportive. Like I was ready to do marketing full time and do web stuff full time just because it was, I don't know, it was more mind work and less physical work. And I've always been eager to do mind work over physical work.
Fair, but you're so good at like the physical and the visual and the,
yeah,
and also mind work. But
I like the mind work. I like the visual work too, but I would hope that somehow is coming across in the strategy work, you know, that like companies are becoming more consistent and visually more together because they have my help with kind of the overall arching mission of what, who they are and what they're doing. So I feel like it's in there somewhere, the old work. It's just not like at the forefront.
Do you think that if Instagram was like more prominent, or I guess didn't even exist yet, if it had existed, or if like Pinterest was more of a thing back then, do you think that business would have or could have like?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely not a thing. And I literally did no marketing for it. I mean, I just, the only way I marketed was like Craft Magazine featured me, Time Magazine featured me, Renegade Craft Fair's website featured me. So basically other publications featured my work. And that's the only marketing that I had.
And your brain was never just like, I need to figure out a way to like that woman who made the patterns. Like, I knew.
Oh yeah, I thought about it. I thought about actually having the shirts just manufactured for me and just selling them. But then that would change the whole product.
Right.
Because it would be not hand embroidered.
Yeah.
And or who am I going to hire to hand embroider that's going to be fair working conditions and fair pay?
Right.
Like the only way to do fashion, I feel like, on a cheaper scale is to do fast fashion. And I, you know, some it's unethical.
Everything you're against.
Yeah. And it's like, totally against what I stand for. So I don't buy fast fashion anymore. And I wouldn't want to be a part of that industry. I wouldn't want to like, but the patterns are something that, you know, makes sense. Like my cousin Sari's company, Colette Patterns, like she's really into clothes and sewing her own wardrobe and her, you know, making her own fashion. But like, she's not a fashion designer. She designs patterns and she sells those patterns. And she also does the Seamwork magazine, which is like how to do it, not I'm going to do it for you.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's really smart, sustainable craft business, like the kind of the mental work of craft, not doing the craft itself and selling that specific craft. That's like so labor intensive. And then you have to have a ton of money behind you if you want to do it ethically.
Yeah.
You know, like an Ace and Jig or, you know, any of these other smaller labels that manage to make really cool designer clothes and patterns and stuff and then make that stuff ethically.
I think this is like, it's kind of a segue. I feel like you have a very, this is so millennial of me, so I apologize. Like a really refreshing perspective on you have created a fuck ton of art, as we've alluded to here and as we were talking about before, but also continue to create art when you have time in your time.
That I don't show to anyone.
That you don't show to anyone. You do it solely for you. Which is like so refreshing as an annoying millennial I am. Who like writes a poem and has to share it immediately.
Is it refreshing or is it like, oh God?
I don't know. I mean, it's annoying for me because I want the world to see your art. And I want to see your art because you don't even send it to me personally.
I know.
Which is annoying.
That's the annoying part. I'm such a bad friend.
You are a bad friend. I just want you to share your art with me.
I'm going
to
share some art with you very soon. It's coming your way.
I'm going to hold you to it. But do you find, like, do you think about that at all? Or is that something that you're like, this is for me?
No.
This is my outlet.
I think it's on the shelf for now. Like, I don't, like, it's, you know, it's like the Talking Heads song. Like, you can't see it till it's finished. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not showing anything until I have a very clear idea what it is that I want to show and what I want to say. Like, I have a lot of stuff. It just needs to be organized.
And are you going to be like a Hilma A.F. Klimt? What's her name?
A.F. Klimt.
Yeah.
A.F. Klimt? Yeah. No, she's fucking weird as hell. She's like into mystical stuff.
But I mean, just like in terms of show this only 200 years
old. Oh, right, right. Yeah, no. No, I'm not like, I don't have that much of an ego about it. I think she realized like how talented she was. Like, I think like, no, I just have a, I feel like I have a lot of stuff that already exists that needs context around it.
Yeah.
I want to like have control over that context before I show anything or put anything together. Like, I want to be like, these photographs from this time can be interestingly juxtaposed with like this large amount of suitcases with things falling out of the suitcases next to them. What does that mean? I don't know, but I obsess over suitcases. I love old suitcases. I feel like I want to do something with suitcases and photographs. What does it mean? I don't know. Where am I going to find these suitcases? I don't know. I have a couple at home. So I have like ideas about putting things together, but I just haven't done that yet. So I have a lot of stuff that's like, I have some Super 8 films and I have a shit ton of, you know, black and white photography and even some digital photography. And am I going to do anything with it? I don't know. If I don't do anything with it, maybe when I die, somebody will find it and be like, oh, this is kind of cool. That's definitely happened where people show their work posthumously. Like they don't show it during their lifetime and they do. Cause like maybe they couldn't figure out what the connections were between their work. Maybe they didn't want to figure it out. Maybe they were like, let someone else fucking do this. I don't want to dig through my past and all these memories and all this stuff. Like, let somebody else say what this all means. I don't know what it means.
From just a personal, like, I get like when you go to a museum, you want art to mean something.
Yeah.
But
well, they also contextualize it at a museum.
Right.
You know, and that's what makes it interesting.
Sometimes I just think. Like a good photo.
Yeah. You know for sure. Mean? For sure. Like, sometimes you just like, you're like, that's an amazing photograph and that can speak for itself and stand alone and it doesn't need anything around it or context to make it beautiful.
Right.
I'm more of a storyteller, so I think my images aren't, they're not, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure I've taken photos where people would be like, oh, that's a beautiful photo. But I'm the kind of person that likes to think that there's a story, there's a connectivity in these photos because I kind of shoot like a sporadically, but I'll shoot a lot at the same time. So there's definitely a time and a place in the photos. So it's more like you would need to see a series of photos as opposed to just seeing one photo.
And the idea of just putting that together is overwhelming.
Oh, it's so overwhelming. It's exhausting. No, it definitely interests me, but it's just, I just don't have the mental space for it. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the time for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could make the time for it, but I'm not choosing to make the time for it because I actually like want to be present for my children and I want to cook them dinner every night.
Right.
And I want to, you know, go to their stupid PTA meetings.
Right.
And I want to go to their sports games and I want to listen to their music.
Right. I really enjoy what you said last night when you were saying that, or this morning, whenever it was, that your kids are your side hustle.
My kids are my side hustle. That's kind of like, I'm sure a lot of people have problems with that. Like, your kids should be your priority.
Right.
I'm like, my kids are my side hustle.
But in like,
they so are my priority.
My side hustle, and
in
not
a healthy
to
way.
Compare your kids to my podcast.
These are babies. It's fine.
But like, my side hustle, like, mentally, emotionally, is my priority. Sure, mm-hmm. Do I spend more hours at my day job? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I invest more. So much more into this and other photography, whatever, other projects.
Yeah, as probably I invest more in my children than I do in my business, which
yeah,
is 1,000% why my children are more, my website is more or less in the state that it's always in, which is like half kind of cool, half a shit show.
Yeah. No, it's not. I mean, I think your website's great, but it goes back to this like, yeah, your life is very optimized around priorities.
It's optimized around getting what I need to get done and like sustaining a lifestyle for myself and my family. And that has to do with like living in a relatively comfortable home, which is like not large, definitely by standards of most people in this country, a small home, humble, small abode that is well organized and efficient. And having money left over to travel.
Yeah, you guys travel a good amount. Go to cool places.
We love to travel and go to cool places.
Your kids are like hella lucky that they got to go to Spain for.
They are hella lucky. They are hella spoiled and ungrateful. Love you guys, but you really are brats.
I mean, what kid who hasn't been spoiled isn't a brat?
Yeah, they also work hard, but you know, they're also spoiled.
I feel like they are pretty, especially Juna, don't like feel young.
Yeah.
They're pretty self-aware and seem to have...
They can
They be. Know. They know that they're...
They're lucky. Starting to.
Yeah.
They're starting to have awareness of other and not just themselves.
Yeah. The fact that you're saying like Juna shows up, knows to be home for dinner. Like...
Yeah.
There's a lot of 16-year-olds who are going to like be brats about that.
Yeah. Well, she's definitely sometimes a brat about it, but she's also quite afraid of me.
Right.
As she should be.
As she should be. Any other thoughts on the like life stuff, parent stuff, work stuff, art stuff, how it all works together stuff?
People need to chill the fuck out. No, they need to calm down. No, they need to relax.
Those are all the same thing. I feel like it's important to say that you're one of like the coolest people I know, and you like shun the idea for one.
What?
But shun the idea that you're one of the coolest people.
I'm really not that. I'm really, because I don't believe that I am. Like, I know, I actually know that there's much cooler people in the universe than me.
I mean, there's, sure. Yeah, of course there is. Duh. But in my universe, you're one of the coolest people.
Oh, hugs.
And you're not focused on, like, making that a thing or, like, turning yourself into a brand about it or something.
Oh, God, no.
Which is why
I'm a 90s, I'm a 90s baby. Like, we just didn't do that.
I think it's one of the reasons I find you so fascinating.
Because we're like, we really don't. We're too embarrassed for ourselves to show anything of ourselves, really. It's you millennials, you digital natives.
Yeah.
Have to show everything and tell everything all the time.
All the time.
And are seeking approval constantly. Something
I don't know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh. I mean, everybody seeks approval. Everybody wants approval. I just have a very small core group of people that I want to be approving of me.
Yeah.
And I share with them.
Right.
I don't share with the general public.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be recognized before I die for anything. If I do get recognized for something at some point, that'll just be like a nice little cherry on the top of the cake.
Right.
Because ultimately, I like... kind of lived my life, you know, the way I wanted to live it, but on my own terms, not taking everything so seriously.
Yeah. And the fact that you can also, I guess my main point is you can build a like sustainable or successful business mm-hmm. and like, yeah, live a comfortable, happy life without all the bling shit.
Overreaching, you know, just constantly having to have more growth hacking your life.
You want like a little, I feel like you're always striving for like.
Yeah, that's my personality.
You're always trying to grow your business.
Definitely. Like, I'm always trying to grow and change. And that's always important. I think for anybody, no matter what they do, is to challenge themselves and to work really hard and to grow and change in the ways that you want to. But also keep in mind that that can turn into like mental illness really quickly. and you need to stop and slow down and reflect on that fact that like, are you being anxious and are you working from a place of fear and anxiety, or are you working from a place of like honesty and you're pushing yourself out of your comfort zone a little bit, but also like, you know, you're working from a place of like calmness and peace. You're not working from a place of like fear and anxiety.
Yeah. That's going to be the soundbite.
Yay, I made a soundbite.
You made a soundbite. All right, before I ask you the last couple of questions I ask everyone. For one, we weren't like nearly as goofy or laughy as I thought we would be. I'm kind of proud of us for like staying professional.
I was busy with my hands.
Yeah.
I think if I didn't have anything to do, I would have
meandered and said a bunch of stupid shit.
Yeah, because I'm anxious.
Really? You're still anxious?
I'm always anxious. I'm just an anxious person.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to be. I'm trying to be mindful about that. But I still am, I think, an anxious person.
In what ways are you trying to be more mindful of that?
Well, like in just what I said, in like working out your stuff that you want to do in life and that you want to say in life and working from a place of like peace and joy and love and not working from a place of like fear and compulsion and anxiety, like where you're like, I have to do this and I have to get this done. And I think more so than anxious, I always feel very awkward, especially talking about myself. It's like, it feels like, ugh, you know how it is.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't want to talk about myself.
Yeah, I mean, I literally have a podcast. I ask questions, so I never have to talk about myself. So before the last questions, what's next for Demelon?
What's next? I mean, it would be nice if I had a plan.
Yeah, what are your goals for next year?
I think it's just trying to make more connections with people that I respect and admire their work and that are in like complementary fields to me, and so that we can work together and work on stuff that we give a shit about and not work on stuff that we don't want to work on. Just trying to grow it organically in the direction that I want to go. And I think that that comes from like talking to good people and meeting good people and not fucking networking.
Yeah.
Like randomly, but like growing those connections of people that are kind of like your brand ambassadors.
Yeah.
And that will like help you out and say good things about you to other people, and like building those relationships. And, you know, the people that come see your shows, if you're a musician when you first start out, like those are the people that you want to stay in touch with, because they will always be like your number one fans, and they will always help you out, and they will always come to your shows even when you're sad and depressed and not making your best work.
Right.
I think that's what's next, is just keeping those relationships going and keeping those relationships strong and making sure that those relationships are growing and not being like obsessive, like, oh, I've got to, you know, have 5 new clients by the end of the year or else I'm a failure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Any advice? What would you rather give? Would you rather give advice to someone looking to like start their own business, or would you rather give advice to someone like a brand who needs help?
Or an artist that's afraid to show their work.
Or an artist that's afraid to show their work. Yeah. Who do you? I mean, or you can give all 3. But I usually try to just ask for 1 piece of advice.
Yeah. What's something you're like, oh, I just wish more people knew this? I think my advice that I'm giving myself right now, and that is very helpful for me to remind myself of, is that like good things take time. And no matter what it is, whether it be art or business or just life in general, it's that like good things take time, and you don't necessarily know when it's all going to come together. But if you're doing work that you care about with like people you care about, and like it's again coming from a place of like peace and love and like calmness, that it's all going to come together. Like you have to trust that it's all going to be worth something, and it's all going to mean something to you at least, or to your family or friends, like at like when you can be happy. I don't know that there's ever a time that you're going to be 100% satisfied from like a creative or business perspective, because I think creative people and business people are naturally wanting more all the time. They're naturally wanting to try new things and be better and do more and do better. And that's a good thing. Like that's a positive thing, but like know that good things take time. And if you're having a lot of anxiety about that, or about what you're currently doing, just like stop that. Stop having that. Like sit down, like drink a cup of tea, like put on a David Bowie record and like meditate on that shit for a minute. Like calm down. Like it's gonna be okay. You need to just stop worrying. Sometimes you need to not do anything to like do stuff better.
Why do I feel like this is a personal?
Yeah, for sure. I need to listen to my own advice.
Yeah. I mean, personal to me.
Maybe it is personal to you. You don't seem like an anxious, neurotic person to me, though. So
yeah, again, Pisces, we internalize. Yeah.
You're anxious externally about like what you're going to do next.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like to the point that good things take time. Right?
Good things take time. Yeah. And there's also no right. There's not one right answer. There's no like this ultimate point that you're going to get to.
Right.
Like per your podcast, it's about the process. It's not about the destination necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get there and be like, oh, I'm there. I'm done with my life. I don't have to ever do anything ever again. I'm like, this is the piece of art that I can end all art making, or this is the client that will end all like business strategy. Right. Like, you're going to always have to do work. So you better get cool with it. Like better chill out and like calm yourself down, get in a good space, not panic. Probably don't live in New York City. Lay off the coffee, you know, maybe switch to green tea in the afternoon instead.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What does the word process mean to you?
I think it's like, I feel like we've been talking about that the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like just kind of going with it and like slowing down and not having the anxiety that you have to do something or you should do something or you need to do something or that this something is going to be something. Just do the work that you want to do that's important to you, that helps sustain your life and your family's life, and stop always constantly thinking that you have to have recognition or approval for everything. Like, you don't need those things, you know? You don't need everybody to see, like, everything all the time. You can do things for yourself that are just for yourself and your family and your friends. And those people can think you're the coolest person ever. And that's, like, enough. You don't need anyone else to think that, you know? Yeah. So I think kind of, like, the process is, like, getting comfortable with yourself, really.
Mm, it's good. Another soundbite.
Good luck.
Yeah. Godspeed.
Have fun.
I started saying Godspeed at work a lot, and people are always like,
I'm like, is that a band?
Yeah. Good Spotify. Last question.
Okay.
What? You better fucking answer this one right.
Oh, God.
I'm just kidding.
I like that.
What's something you're excited about today?
Going to this little town that we're supposedly going to.
That's the right answer.
Maybe looking in a store.
Mm.
Maybe having a biscuit.
Mm.
A croissant.
Mm. Croissant.
A croissant.
Croissant.
A chocolate croissant.
To your point.
Pain de chocolat.
Yeah. I need food. And maybe more coffee.
Well, I made you avocado.
I know. I don't know why I'm hungry again. Was it nerve-wracking?
No, because I was doodling the whole time.
You're supposed to say no because you're so good at your job.
No, because you're so good at your job. Thank and you. Also, I was doodling the entire time.
Yeah.
And I drew a picture of the witch where we're at right now.
Yeah.